Welcome to season 4 of the Coffee and Geography podcast. The aim of the show is to get to know, explore, and celebrate the diverse and intersectional range of people and their love for the world. Join your host, Kit Marie Rackley, and have fun exploring all the myriad of ways guests can connect their lives to geography. Today, let's listen to our first couples episode all about the challenges of science communication. Supporting young people in developing their skills through the Youth STEM Award. Amongst other things, got your brew ready? Great. Enjoy the listen.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Coffee and Geography. And for the first time in almost 100 episodes, I have finally got a couples episode. Finally. I can't believe I've tried and tried and tried. I've got friends who are couples who work in the sector. I've got things like that. But this is not Mr. and Mrs., everybody. This is Dr. and Doctor. This is Dr. Sam and Dr. Simon Fox. How are you doing, both?
Ooh, hello. Nice to see you. Very excited to be here.
We are, and we're very honoured to be your first couple as well. It's quite the occasion.
If there's ever a Wikipedia thing on coffee and geography, it will be noted. It will be noted as a first.
Good,
that's quite exciting.
In my wildest fantasies. now, usually I kind of read your bios out, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to get Simon to introduce Sam, and I'm going to get Sam to introduce Simon. I should have made you aware of that.
I feel set up now. Okay.
That's a good idea.
Sorry, Sam's already told me exactly what I have to say about her.
No, I haven't.
Oh, you're already demonstrating why I wanted to do a couple of episodes. So go on, Simon, introduce Sam for us.
Okay, so Sam is the co-founder of the Youth STEM Award, but more than that, she is an inspiration to young people to become members of the STEM community in all shapes and sizes. She originally studied biological sciences at UEA, went on to do a master's, and then moved into plant research, worked in that for a number of years, which will remain undisclosed, and then finished off with a PhD by publication, which is an amazing achievement, and recognises the fantastic work that she did. And then from there has gone on to really kind of drive the Youth STEM Award forwards, and has gone back to John Innes and done a bit of leadership work and helped them get secure the next tranche of funding, and is now not only doing the YSA, but also working with Royal Norfolk Agricultural Association to deliver the STEM Village for the Royal Norfolk Show.
And I know that, consulting
with
nice.
Lots of other parties. I mean, I know everything about her. It's
this is a long intro.
I know. There's so much to say. I'll stop there. She's brilliant. She's amazing. She's Sam.
Oh, so Simon's going to take over. I'm blushing now. I'm so blushing.
That's the bar that's been set for you, Sam. So your turn to introduce your hubby.
Well, it's my honour to introduce Dr. Simon Fox, who is currently Deputy Principal at East Norfolk Sixth Form College and is also co-founder of the Youth STEM Award. And we met a few years ago now at the John Innes Centre, where Simon was studying for his PhD in plant virology. And he caught my eye in the Friday night bar of the Rec Centre.
Which is my bio.
It's not where we met. Oh, yeah, sorry. I'm sidetracked already. But no, Simon is a wonderful human being. He's an inspirational teacher and leader. And he started his education, sort of academic career at the University of Birmingham before coming, as I mentioned, to John Innes Centre. And he's been in leadership of education quite a long time. Mm-hmm. I don't know how he fits it all in. I really don't. He's passionate about lots of things. He does a lot of climate and sustainability within the college. He's a teacher of biology by training, and generally is a wonderful human being to know. So there you go.
Well, you two know each other very, very well, because that's pretty much exactly what you both wrote on your bios. So well done. You haven't missed anything out there at all. So there might be other things you might want to disclose in the spill the bean section, but we'll see. We'll get to that. Now, folks, just a heads up, Simon is working in a college, works in an education setting. He may have to go at some point. to do some of his job, and then he'll be coming back. But we've said we're not going to edit that out. It's going to be completely organic. So when he's got to go, he's got to go, and then he'll come back. So just to let you know, we want you to get a feel for what that's like, you know. So
and I should say as well, it's for a good reason.
It is for a good reason. Yeah.
It is, and maybe I'll mention that when I come back.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, good. So, okay. And obviously, we all know, we all work, you know, with young people, stuff like that. We know that we don't disclose certain things. There's safeguarding and privacy. You know, like, we're professionals as well. So don't you worry, folks. If it's a good thing, we'll be told. Looking forward to hearing about it. Right, folks. So, Simon, before you do shoot off, you've had time to grab yourself a drink. So what are you drinking?
Well, it was on the list of instructions, and I, as a teacher, I follow instructions. I mean, critically, my mug, as you can see, although the listeners can't, it's a Mighty Ducks.
Mighty Ducks! I was going to suggest just showing that to my kids for a family movie night, actually.
Yeah. Yes, well, they would love it. I made Sam watch it. I'm not sure she was convinced.
I did enjoy it.
it's Lavazza. It's little espresso. And I used an AeroPress to make it, which is an amazing invention.
Are you sponsored by them? Do you get...
I'm not, but I will accept if they're listening.
If it's a more sustainable way of crunching your coffee, then we'll have it.
It is. I'll work out how it is. But basically, it makes really, really good coffee. Really good coffee.
Well, packaging, is there?
So it's just grounds, and then it pushes the filter through, and it's paper filters, so it's all biodegradable. It's very good. That's what I'm drinking.
And Sam?
Well, I realised I kind of failed because I've come to a podcast called Coffee and Geography with a cup of tea.
I drink tea.
A good old builder's tea. Oh, that's okay then. Phew, yeah. I thought I was going to be kicked out.
No.
But it's a good old cup of builder's tea. I do love coffee, but I just, you know, I fancy a cup of tea in the afternoons. And yeah. I've got it's called a Swift Tea mug, because this was a Christmas present, and it's a Taylor Swift mug with all the albums and guitars painted on the side, which I got for Christmas. And I don't know if this is official merchandise, but I enjoy using it.
It may not be.
Apologies, Taylor, if you're listening.
I wish
that can sue us. that would pale into significance against the reality of her listening, which would be amazing.
Good old builder's tea.
I do have one famous person who listens, at least, and that's the actor Adil Hussain, the Indian actor Adil Hussain, Life of Pi fame and things like that. So Adil,
nice.
Yeah, I managed to get to speak to him on this. So Adil will admit himself that he's a few stages away from Taylor Swift, but you know, but in all fairness, yes. Adil's got a geography degree. Taylor Swift doesn't. So I think I'll stick with Adil.
Did not know that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's for other people to go in their own time and listen back, folks. Just self-promoting your own podcast, you know. It's a thing you do. Was it Birmingham you're at? So I mean, I know you got to go in a second, but I know Sam can take over with this. So, but again, I'm from Essex. Sam, are you originally from this area, or have you come from somewhere else
I'm
as well?
I'm from Essex.
I'm from Essex.
We're all from
Essex.
This
is like an Essex party.
So I'm from Harlow. Sam, where are you from?
I'm from Rayleigh, which is Southend and Chelmsford, or Southend.
Southend, yeah.
To call it.
And in your best Essex accent, Simon, yourself?
Chelmsford.
So you're only up the road from where I was.
The posh part.
I had a very good... So not near the Army and Navy roundabout then.
No. Although I did frequent the Army and Navy.
It's not there anymore.
This is becoming a very localised podcast.
It is.
I did frequent the Army and Navy and play a lot of pool and enjoy cider as a young person as well.
It's a cultured podcast, folks. So, you know, and despite what people think, we are somewhat cultured in it from Essex, you know, in a certain way.
And that's why we all leave Essex and go.
And that was what my point I was moving on to, is that we've all three of us have ended up in Norwich and Norfolk. And it seems to be a theme, you know, when obviously a lot of my guests are from the Norwich area because of people I know, their friends and whatnot. And we all have our own stories about why Norwich or Norfolk has captured us and has kept hold of us. So Simon, so you've gone away from it a lot. You know, it's hard to say Essex is East Anglia, but it is culturally. And then, so you've gone away from Essex and then Birmingham, and you've come back up here. So yeah, what is it about? Was it Sam that kept you here in Norfolk, or was it something else?
No, well, I met Sam when I came here. It was actually my PhD.
Right.
So when I did my degree, I really got into stats and plant genetics particularly, and had a PhD lined up at Birmingham, and just thought, well, where's the best place to do plant genetics? I'll have a look at that, and found the John Innes Centre. And there were sort of four PhDs that I was interested. Worked differently in those days. So I applied for all four and came down and interviewed and just really liked it. So, you know, again, if you live in Essex, generally you go on Norfolk for your holidays quite a lot.
This is very true.
So yeah, so it felt like kind of, oh, I can work in the place that I feel like I'm on holiday. And it was just amazing. The people at the John Innes were brilliant, and it just felt like this is where I want to be doing science. And it's an amazing place to live, and the rest is history. And then, yeah, a year later, I kind of met Sam, and that was it really. And then we love it. And then, yeah. You know, just it's an amazing place to kind of live and work. And as an educator, you feel like you're making a real difference to the young people, which is a beautiful segue into me departing for a brief amount of time. And Sam can explain why she's here.
Yeah, oh. Simon will be back soon. Simon's got his responsibilities as in a college. He's just doing that right now. Off he goes. Right. So, Sam, what about yourself? So, same reason, really. You came here. John Innes, and then you stuck around.
Yeah, I came up to go to university at UEA.
Same as me.
And like Simon, and I didn't know him when we were kids, but yeah, we used to come up on holiday on the, you know, at Hemsby. On the East Coast in little chalet or camping and caravanning.
Yeah.
So when I was looking for uni, I mean, I don't think I wanted to go too far away from home. I sort of definitely wanted to be away. And I basically looked, where's about 2 hours away? You know, just in case I need to go back, you know, for emergencies or something, I'll get my washing done. 2 hours on the train, sort of reasonable. And I came and had a visit. Yeah. And looked and found Norwich Market. And I thought Norwich Market was just great, and it's still great to this day. So, yeah.
And they've modernised it pretty well as well, yeah.
They have. So I liked UEA, and I've basically never left because I still work on campus and now do some guest lecturing at UEA as well as being a scientist on the research park. So, yeah, kind of never left really. And, yeah, I love Norfolk and, really like all the beaches and the nature and the big skies of Norfolk. So, love it.
So I don't know if this will ring a bell then as an Essex person going up to Norfolk for. So we went to, so one of the places me and my family went to on holiday was Searles in Hunstanton. That's one of the places. Oh. And another place was Vauxhall Holiday Park just outside of Great Yarmouth.
Yes. I've driven past. I've never been there. But, you know, I think we had a bio in, you know, ball there or graduation ball there.
At Vauxhall Holiday Park or something like that.
I think so.
Oh, my goodness.
I think it was. I think they've got a massive, like, you know, like big party area, and they must have hired it out. I'm pretty sure. Is it on the left as you drive into Great Yarmouth?
I think, it's on the Acle Road. Yeah, it's on the Acle Road just outside of Great Yarmouth. Yeah. And so, folks, the reason why this is content, I mean, this, if you're from, most of my listeners from the UK, you're kind of like, nodding your head, the whole holiday park thing, especially. If you were able to go away domestically on holiday, quite, you know, common camping holiday, caravan park, that kind of stuff. If you're from, I know I've got a lot of listeners in North America as well, and some down under, this to you is be like, what the hell is this? Right? So, because you know, my family in the States, some of them, you know, some of them have got caravans, things like that. So, you know, they will rent out RVs, the big RVs, but this is an institution here in the United Kingdom, folks. It is an institution. You pack your tents and stuff like that. You drive not too far away from home, 2 hours as Sam and I.
A couple of hours.
Yeah. You get somewhere a little bit different to home, but not too different to homes, like the coast or something like that. And then what you do, you set up your tent or pitch your caravan in a field, but in this holiday park, You've got shops, you've got swimming pools, you've got clubs, you've got maybe a mini golf course, you know, basically, you know.
Certainly it's a pool table. It's about to be a pool table, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, and park for the kids to play on and things like that. And so what the parents would do is that they'd sit in the, like, the common area of the big tent or in the one of the caravans, tell us kids to clear off. We'll go and run around the caravan park for the rest of the day, come back and have cooked dinner over a you know, one of those portable gas propane things.
A single That's ring, it. You know, like maybe two ring, and you could have like beans, baked beans or something.
That's
or
it.
Fried egg.
And if you were, and if you're well off enough,
terrible.
Oh yeah, yeah. Putting up tents in the wind and the rain, yeah.
In the rain, yeah.
But you do it anyway. Yeah, like we know as
summer holiday.
Yeah, we know as environmentalists and geographers, it's like the sea breeze. You know, trying to pitch a tent on the coast is problematic enough under normal conditions because of the sea breezes, right? But then when you got the weather coming in from the North Sea, that's interesting.
Yeah, we never used to go abroad on holiday as kids. You know, I didn't realize it. We were obviously being very environmentally friendly at the time. I mean, I was dead jealous. You know, I think someone in my school once went to America.
Yeah,
went to Disney. I don't know if it's Disneyland or Disney World. Cause I
yeah,
know
World
the
in Florida, land in California.
So, yeah, Disney World. Then. And that was just so, I mean, that was so exotic.
Yeah.
I was so envious of that. But no,
I did that.
No?
I did that twice as a kid, but I didn't realise my parents told me, because we're from a working class background, that the amount of money and time they scrimped and saved and scrimped and saved. And I didn't know how much my parents actually sacrificed in order for us to have a holiday to the, you know, to the States.
Yeah.
So, and then in the '90s, things was a bit of an upturn. You know, my dad was in the police force. He was doing quite well. The police force had sold us the police house that we were living in. So we actually were very lucky to get on the housing market very cheaply. And all of a sudden, you know, life got a lot easier. And then all of a sudden we were going over quite often, you know. So, but that first time in 1987 and 1992 were the two times I remember as a kid. That was basically all we did was scrimp and save and maybe just pop to Great Yarmouth or something for a weekend or something like
that's
in between. Yeah.
That's it.
So,
because
that's when the package holidays came out. You know,
yeah, I don't think they really, it didn't really exist so much when I was a kid, really.
Yeah,
I mean, it certainly wasn't so common, but you know, but you know, and Simon and I, we have done the whole camping holiday as adults, but yeah, a few years ago, it's going back a bit now, we bought ourselves a lovely, a really big tent, you know, we spared no expense, you know, it had like a two little bedrooms, a little lounge, I mean, still a bit of canvas, but sort of. And we went down to Cornwall, which I also love, and we had 2 weeks booked, and it rained the entire time.
As it does.
And I said, well, that's it. Never again. We're doing 2 weeks camping holiday. But we stuck it out because we're British, and we stuck it out.
Now, I wonder, Sam, if that's the difference between a biologist and a geographer. Is a biologist like, oh, the weather, and the geographer says, there's no such thing as bad weather, just bad clothing.
That's so true, isn't it? Yeah, I have to say, I do moan about the weather a lot. I do like today, I'm just looking out my window, it's gloriously sunshine today. It's been so rainy. It's come out nice today and it feels like spring is in the air. And I have to say, it makes me smile inside and out.
Yeah.
I do love it when you feel like you're getting through the winter. I mean, I don't mind winter. I don't mind a lovely crisp day.
Yep.
But I get grumpy when it is just rain and damp. But I think you're right, that is the difference. And I spent most of my working life indoors in a laboratory or going into a glass house where we would grow our plants, and there'd be like nice warm lighting in there.
Yeah,
we use LED lighting now, so it's much more sustainable. But we obviously have to grow your plants in a controlled environment, either in a controlled environment room where it's all very controlled with nice warm. So sometimes on a cold day, I'm just gonna go and check my plants and go in that room, warm up a bit.
Yeah, but that's kind of the sort of stuff you're working on at the moment. So you said here, like, you know, you've got it says here, the very long-term aim of helping develop more sustainable crops that can provide greater yields with fewer inputs. So yeah, so what kind of stuff are you and your colleagues kind of getting up to up there in the John Innes Centre?
Well, there's so much research that goes on at John Innes Centre. It's really amazing. But it really is a world-leading institute in plant and microbial sciences. And the kind of research, and I should say I've finished now in the lab, so I don't do, but I did 20 years on the bench you know, with the pipette in hand. And yeah, it was really studying how plants form their shapes. So it was very much what we might call blue, funny enough, going back to the weather, blue skies research, which means it wasn't focused on a particular applied outcome, but it was really fundamentally trying to understand how plants actually control their growth. So I was looking at cells under the microscope, so growing a tiny seedling under the microscope. I developed a sort of time lapse, or I worked with colleagues to develop a sort of time lapse video, if you like, but nice. Under a very high powerful microscope. So we had to find a way of keeping the plant alive under the microscope and time lapse, you know, imaging it very frequently so that we can watch those cells dividing and growing. And we use computer science and mathematics to make measurements at the cellular level and then model how the cells would grow and divide in a certain orientation to create a leaf from a ball of cells. So if you think about it, it's kind of an amazing thing. How does a ball of cells turn into a leaf or a petal? And of course, it's the same kind of or similar process within a human embryo. How do you go from a ball of cells into a limb or a leg? You know, and that's the kind of process that we were looking at. And we made the first ever computer simulation of a growing leaf. That was kind of a world's first.
That's amazing.
That was accurate at the cellular level. And from that, we could infer the kind of molecular control that was going on beneath the surface that you couldn't see by the naked eye. And that kind of has this sort of long-term aim of helping scientists and helping people to understand how plants control their growth in those sort of, and if we understand the processes and we understand the genetics, we hopefully can help sort of develop more efficient plants and crops for the future.
That's incredible.
Because as you know, obviously, we need to produce more food for more people.
Indeed.
With less input, so less water, less pesticides. And there's so much exciting research going on, and particularly here in Norwich at Norwich Research Park. So plenty of my colleagues there are still doing this really innovative research, developing all kinds of novel and exciting techniques and new ways that we can help farmers develop. And of course, gene editing is a sort of the sort of latest or well-known thing that people might have heard of, how we can create very precise little snips of the DNA, for example, to make them maybe resistant to pathogens. So maybe potatoes that are more resistant to the blight, things like that. So very, very exciting work. And I still work there now, but in more of a collaborative way and very much focusing on the science communication and working with education and outreach and with the STEM Award, which I founded whilst I was a scientist at John Innes together with Simon.
Yeah, and when Simon gets back from his meeting with a student, we'll go on to that. That's amazing. Yeah, because you know what that reminded me, right? When I was, I mean, it died away as I was in my teaching career, but certainly when I was first started teaching and when I was a student myself, you know, one of the major controversial issues to be discussed in the classroom was GM crops and Frankenstein crops and stuff like that. And I remember that being such a thing in the 90s in particular. Yeah. And then I remember my biology teacher, Mrs. Shan, who said something along the lines of, we've been doing this kind of stuff for thousands of years. It is not new. It is just the scale that we are doing that at has just shrunk. So, you know, we've been genetically modifying crops for ages simply by, I wonder what would happen if we would breed this plant with this plant, which wouldn't normally breed together. That is genetically engineering. And it's like, so to me, I kind of, especially coming from a geographical point of view, you know, when we're pretty much guaranteed to have between 10 and 11 billion people on the planet by 2100, you know, that these are kind of necessary kind of progress that we need. And if it means that we can have greater crop yields for smaller inputs, and in a way that is enhancing, you know, both the quality of the plant and the quality of the human race, I don't see a problem with that. You know, to feed 11 billion people for less of an impact on the planet, I can't see that being a problem. I'm not going to ingest that and suddenly become Frankenstein's monster, am I? So,
no. There was so much scaremongering and what we might now today call fake news at the time. And if you Google GM, you'll still see these awful pictures that have absolutely nothing to do with genetic engineering of plants. So they're usually, typically you might see, I say, a lovely fresh looking tomato with a needle injecting in something, you know, there's nothing, you know, it has absolutely no bearing on the actual process at all, but yeah, it's a fear factor, you know, and a real fail of science communication. And when I do some guest lectures at the UEA in the science communication on the module there, and actually that's a big topic that we talk about, and how so and why it's so important for scientists to be able to communicate effectively with the general public and with politicians, so that we don't have things like that. And of course, the other big thing that was around similar time, the climate, or maybe a bit later, but climate change and the research that maybe put the technology and the well, certainly for GM, put technology back many, many years, and for climate research and acceptance back maybe 10, 20 years as well. And it takes a really long time for you to get over a very negative news story. We see it at the moment with the measles now making a big comeback, because many people were taken in by a very flawed study on the MMR vaccine that linked it to autism, that's been very quickly shown to be completely flawed and simply not true. And yet that fear factor stopped many people getting that vaccine, and it was so, so important. And we're seeing now the resurgence of what was once an eliminated sort of in the UK disease, and has so many terrible, terrible implications for people that get infected by that. They can be hospitalized and have all sorts of problems. So science communication is a really big passion of mine, and I think partly with the Youth STEM Award, you know, trying to empower young people to feel connected to science and feel like it can be for them, and to maybe talk about it with their families more, and just bring it back into the conversation, is so important.
You're spot on. I mean, I've spoken about this kind of stuff from a climate science communication point of view so many times, but as a trans, neurodiverse climate science educator, I feel that quite intensely, you know, with everything that I do. But yeah, I mean, going back to what you said about the climate, this is the thing that also, folks, you might not be aware of, is that we do have specific courses at university, UEA, anywhere, which don't just work on knowledge and intellectual capital, as we call it. We also do things skills based. Like when I did my science communication course in my third year at UEA, that was with then Dr. Brian Reed, who ran that course, and that was the start of my passion to be a science communicator, to do what I do today.
Are you a business or organization passionate about ethical practices, products, and systems? Is being sustainable, inclusive, and equitable core to your values? And do you want to spread the word amongst listeners who share these ideals? Then sponsor the Coffee and Geography podcast. There are pricing options to suit a range of needs, and you know you are supporting independent educational efforts that aligns with your aims. Visit bit.ly/coffee. Geog, sponsor, for more details.
Right, Simon has returned.
So, yay!
Hello, back. I'm back. Sorry, apologies for that.
Was everything okay?
Yeah.
Yes, no, it was a meeting for a very exciting trip that we're running for the students just after half term. So I needed to catch up with them and give them some details and make sure that they are sort of primed. Basically.
Can you share what the trip is?
What are you at liberty to share? I mean, there's only us three here, so no one else is listening.
I can disclose a reasonable amount of information, I think. So we are going, it's a bit of a mixed bag, but we're going to Duxford, to the Imperial War Museum. Ooh. And we're going to the Cinema Museum.
The Cinema Museum?
Cinematic provision. And then in the evening, we're splitting into two parts, and I'm taking a group of students to see Othello by candlelight.
Oh, crikey, nice.
Actually, this is quite a good one. This is we can see which of these two both of you would choose to go on. So option one, Othello by candlelight at the Globe. Option two is June 2 at the BFI IMAX.
Oh, Simon, you know me too well.
So I've ended up with the one that I would most like,
which is
the Othello.
Othello, yeah, I think I'd pick that too. I've never been to the Globe Theatre. I'd like to.
Actually, I mean, I'm a sci-fi nerd, but So obviously I'd go for, but the reason why I would opt for Dune 2, because I want to see it at the IMAX, and I have been to the Globe many times. I used to take year 9s there every year when I worked at school. So I've been to the Globe like over a dozen times. So I can't pass up to where it was a joint geography and history, joint geography, history and English trip to, with a whole of year 9s. So yeah, we used to take one of them down there because, you know, kids from rural Norfolk, take them down to London, that's an experience by itself. So I've done the Globe and I want to see Dune 2 anyway. IMAX, yes, please.
Yeah.
Be interested to see what you are. Well, yeah. So. I would, oh, crikey. Yeah, I'd be interested in what your students pick.
Yeah, do they get a choice?
They've already picked. No, the English
have you
students
got anyone
have to
going to the Globe?
Oh, but,
yeah. Anyone go?
Have you had any complaints from those English students yet?
I might after this meeting. And then the next day, it doesn't end there, folks. Wow. This is how good the trips are at East Norfolk. The day after, we're going to Harry Potter for the day.
Oh,
Harry Potter Studios. Yeah.
And what subject? What subject is that?
Well, it's English or creative media and
right,
IT.
Well,
so
yeah.
It kind of works.
No, it is
so no geography. Okay. Well, there might
all right,
be
okay,
as well.
Folks. Well, yeah, you can link geography to anything, you know. But we'll yeah. That's another day. We've done that many times. So just as you were outside, well, one thing we were just talking about, Sam's background with the research at Jodian Centre, but then naturally that came up as about what she does and you two do together now, which is the Youth STEM Award. And this is something that I really want to make sure that we really talk about quite a lot here on the podcast, because folks, this is something, if you are an educator or you work with young people or you're a young person yourself, you can get involved with this, and it is amazing. So which of you two, I think, Simon, why don't you, since you've been out of the room for a bit, why don't you start us off? So Youth STEM Award, so, and it is STEM with two M's. So we want to start with why it's two M's and not one M, and why you're still missing out the A, but I'm not going to anger any arts people. But seriously, tell us what Youth STEM Award is all about, why you set it up, and yeah, and kind of like an overview of what you're trying to achieve with it.
So Youth STEM Award was really born out of us thinking about how we could most easily give young people the empowerment to show the legacy of the STEM activities that they did. So we have planned lots of projects and opportunities together over the years. And on one occasion, we just thought, actually, we want the legacy of this to continue going. We want young people to think about why they're doing it and be able to talk about it in a year or two's time in the same way that they feel about it now. So we looked around and we couldn't find anything that we thought did that job. So we came up with it, and Youth STEM Award was born. And it's a skills-based achievement framework. So it allows young people to log the STEM activities that they do outside of the curriculum. And the way that they log it is time-based. So there's no value judgment to how good the STEM activity is or how impactful it is, other than they do it. And they get some form of engagement and some form of inspiration from it, hopefully. So they can log anything from watching Blue Planet to doing some conservation work to going to the Science Museum to listening to your podcast as well, Kit. They could literally listen to this and then log it and explain what they took from it, what they learned from it, and what they're going to do with it. And they can do that under four strands. So this would probably fall maybe under developing skills and knowledge if they learned something new about the world of geography. They could log it under shaping your future, which is more about exploring future careers. Mm-hmm. There's also engaging the public. So this is a perfect example of engaging the public in STEM. They might be inspired to do something like this in their own school or community. Or they can do inspiring the next generation. So that's where they really think about how do you get the next line of young people coming up through that STEM pipeline. And then when they've collected enough hours in the four strands, then they achieve their bronze or their silver or their gold awards as that log time goes up. And there's a few other criteria and checklists, but that's the main thrust of it. And the extra M, because medicine is such a particular route in STEM,
yeah,
that we really wanted to get young people from kind of year 9 thinking about what they needed to do to be ready for that. Mm-hmm. As an opportunity, whether that's in healthcare or paramedic science or as a doctor or a dentist or whatever it might be. So we thought pulling that out was actually kind of really important as well. So I think Sam is actually the person who usually starts off by describing this. So this is now a test to see
what I've left
out or forgotten.
Yeah. I would just say that.
Just interject there. So year nine folks, for those who don't know, is 13, 14 year olds. So for those outside of the UK education system. Sorry, Sam, just had to get that in there for our international listeners. I'm being optimistic, but still.
Yeah. And we are international in a small, so we started in Norwich.
Oh.
Girls in Norwich, because it was a way that I wanted to help support young women to consider STEM as their futures. So we started in the first year with just girls, and then we opened to any gender, and we go now from 11, 12 year olds up to 19 year olds, and they can take part from anywhere in the world. So people can take part through their school or college, and we've got schools and colleges across England and Wales. And now just recently we've got a school sign up from Toulouse in France. So hello to anyone who's listening in France.
Matt Pobry, my friend in Toulouse. Matt, is the International School of Toulouse, if that is?
I think it could be.
That is the one that has signed up, yes.
Yeah. Matt Pobry in the geography department. Hopefully, Matt, you're getting your kids involved in STEM and your colleagues in science.
Excellent. That's great. And the only thing just to mention is, Simon mentioned the extra M for medicine, but the other bit of STEM, for anyone who isn't quite familiar, it's science, technology, engineering, and maths and medicine. And the A, some people call STEAM, which is very great. We say that arts and creativity are embedded throughout. And
nice.
That there would be no science and no STEM without arts and creativity. And that there's a remarkable amount of arts and creativity within all areas of STEM, and particularly in problem solving and things like that, and particularly in biology through my career history, the beauty of nature.
Nicely done, Sam. Yeah, there's a lot of people, and I've been bringing a lot of that into my climate science communication. I've been bringing arts in because I had to toss up between geography and drama at GCSE, and I love my drama, but I've now been doing, I think I did a performance at Norwich Theatre recently about climate change, for example, and bringing art, and it's such a powerful way to communicate. And you're right. Without that imaginative, creative spark, can you imagine how far, you can't really put a number on it, how far, you know, STEM would be still in the dark ages without that creativity? Because that's where the spark comes from.
Mm.
So, yeah.
Yes, I think so. And the interest, and particularly, I guess, biology, which is my background, you know, when people have sought to understand how nature works, you know, that is just a beautiful thing.
Yeah. So I'm going to do a kind of like a funny version of Jog On, one of the features of this podcast, where I'm going to give you five topics. You can only choose three to talk about, but you're going to link them to the Youth STEM Award. Okay. So rather than talking about them in general, which is what usually happens, so you have to agree as a couple team which ones you're going to jog on, talk about, or take a hike you're not going to talk about, right? And you've got whatever you say about them has got to be related to the STEM or the Youth STEM Award, right? Okay, so ready for the first topic, to whether you're going to talk about or pass?
Yeah.
Right. Okay. The first topic, and this is completely randomly generated, I didn't cheat on this. The first one is alligators.
Okay. I'd say take a hike. Would you? Can you think of anything, Simon?
I mean, I always, but I think let's take a hike on that one.
Take a hike on that.
I don't think it's good to mix alligators and school children. It's
good point. Yeah, good point.
Very complicated risk assessment.
Right. You still got to talk about three, but you've only got four remaining now. So you've effectively got one more pass left, right? Right. Again, this is completely random. I just used a website to randomly generate it. The next one's wrestling.
Wrestling?
Which is funny coming after alligators, I know. But
wrestling.
Going all Steve Irwin here.
Then we could go wrestling. What do you think? Shall we jog on, Simon?
I think we should. It's risky. I mean, if it's a random word generator, I feel like this could just get worse and worse.
Go for it. Come on, you're smart.
Yeah. Okay. So one of the interesting things about wrestling is that it is an entertainment, sports entertainment. So, and you do get a lot of young people who kind of, particularly when they're thinking about engaging the public, that sometimes they find that one of the harder strands to do. Mm. So what we usually get them to explore is something they feel really passionately about, something they're really interested in. We get them to, we suggest that they research it, and then they produce a blog and a kind of summary of that information that we then share out through our website. So we've got lots of blogs on our Youth STEM Award website, ysawards.co.uk, where you can go and you can see the writing that these young people have done. And it is absolutely fascinating. It's all sorts of topics. So wrestling would be a really good example, where if you had a young person who was kind of struggling how to log some hours in that, they could really get into maybe the physics of forces. So the idea of recoil, and they could explore that idea of wrestlers and how they safely do what they do. Mm. You know, how do they jump from the top ropes, and how do they dissipate that force by increasing their surface area so that they don't injure themselves? And also, how might they injure themselves if they don't do that properly? So they could then look at the force equations behind that, and kind of really get people thinking about what we do, or what they do as entertainers for our enjoyment, and how science protects them.
Nice.
When they're doing that. That's, there you go.
Nicely done, Simon. Yeah, and shout out to an ex-student of mine who's now a semi-professional wrestler. So Charlie Spooner, whose wrestler name is Winston. But I remember him being a small little lad. So when I was doing his GCC job, he said, "I'm going to become a wrestler." And I was like, "Excellent." And I tried to build that in when I was doing intervention with him and stuff like that. And now He's a semi-pro wrestler, and he is built like what I can't say on a family podcast. Okay, you ready for the next one?
Wow. Yes.
Right. So you got two jog-ons and one take a hike left. So the next one is, and no, it gets easy to be honest. Next one's vaccines.
Oh.
You want to do that one, Sam?
I'll leave this one to Sam. Yeah.
Jog on. Well, I think it's so important, isn't it, vaccines, to be able to have a public debate about that. And I think that absolutely ties to the Youth STEM Award and the STEM Award. In fact, we've talked about it already today, the importance of science communication. Mm-hmm. So I think it's so important that the general public has a certain level of science literacy, because we all need to make decisions in our daily lives. And I think having an understanding of the science behind it, how, for example, the COVID vaccine was made in such a seemingly short time, and being able to have a basic understanding or be able to read the articles and unpick the science behind it is so, so important. So I think from the STEM Award, we would encourage young people to develop their skills and knowledge about something like vaccines, be able to communicate that with their families. That would be a perfect topic. So nice. Yeah, super, super important.
Yeah, I thought that one would feel like a glove. Yeah, go on, Simon.
Yeah.
Well, it's, well, in terms of kind of future careers and shaping your future.
Yes.
I mean, the world are kind of like, for good or bad, big pharma, and kind of the production of medicines and vaccinations and how we actually do that at scale and how the new tech's going to allow us to do that. So we need young people to come through that pipeline who understand the new tech and the new methodologies, yeah, and can really kind of drive them forwards. So they could pull that bit out as well, which again, I mean, STEM, you know, it's such a huge field that actually we kind of hope the YSA helps young people to begin focusing in on some of the careers that are out there at the same time.
Can I just add as well, very quickly, for anyone interested to look up the research from John Innes Centre, plug again for John Innes Centre, a few years ago. In fact, this ties back to you, Simon, because your old PhD supervisor, Professor George Lomonosov, and his team developed vaccines from plants. So the normal way that generally vaccines are made is actually using eggs, chicken eggs. Mm. They need lots and lots of chicken eggs. That's why if you go and have a flu vaccine, they might say, "Are you allergic to eggs?"
Oh,
that's how it's made. But actually, you can now make vaccines in plants, and it's a sort of factory of plants. And that's I haven't got time to go into the details of it now, but it's a fascinating thing, and I probably can't remember them. But yeah, you can make vaccines out
that's
of plants.
Amazing! I never knew that.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that could be the future.
Yeah. Yeah, and of course, kids are very. We know as I'm aging and my kids are getting older. You know, they're my eldest is in year five now. They are quick to pick up tech, and you're right. You're absolutely right, Simon. The tech that they're going to be able to manage will be beyond my comprehension very soon, and so for them to bring in their innate skills in tech into things like this is going to be so important. So yeah, It's and that's why I love things like YouSting Award, because they can, you know, in fact, me and my eldest are working on a way of using Minecraft to teach geography at the moment. So and he's teaching me about different things and says, well, no, you could do that. You need this much wood to make this much. And that's like, oh, crikey. Yeah, I can. So I'm turning it into a SciComm kind of thing. But he's doing a whole, well, this is how the Minecraft kind of engine works and how we can. And he's only 9. So
that's amazing. Yeah. Great.
Right. So there's two words left, but you've got, if you pass on this one, you've got to do the last one. So the next one is athletics. Kind of similar to wrestling almost, isn't it?
Yeah.
I feel like we should
take a high.
Right. So you've got to talk about this last one then, right? And that's weaving.
Weaving?
Ooh. Okay.
So you've got to talk about this one.
That's okay. So obviously one of the things that is really interesting in STEM is historical context. So it's kind of the technological development of things and kind of where we've come from and where we're going to. And you'll have done, geography, you do lots of that, human geography, kind of understanding, you know, why society and cultures develop and why tech follows that. And, you know, so there you go, there's some geography. Just about. So I think weaving is a really good example of that. Think about kind of industrial revolution and that kind of manufacturing process that allowed weaving to come to the masses. And then you could tie it into printing in the same way. But you could also think about where we are now with materials. So the development of new materials that have gone beyond weaving into all sorts of exciting kind of material science. Mm. What is the future? How do we make that sustainable? So, you know, when we think about weaving, the materials that we tend to use that historically from have had a really high impact on the environment. Mm. And also in terms of kind of the dyeing and colouring, that can kind of come in as well. And how does technology continue? So that would be a great example where a student could kind of look at the history and then do some future scoping. You know, where are we heading with this? And how is the space race going to change material development and, you know, all that kind of stuff? And then again, developing skills and knowledge, they could log that under there, or they could do something really interesting for some year sevens or primary school children around, you know, weaving and production methods. So, and I feel like I want to go and do some of that myself. I want to go and research materials.
That is because I think what we've discovered through this section, this feature, is that STEM is in everything.
It's everywhere.
Everything. Yeah. I mean, you know, you might not think of it straight away, but almost everything we use in our daily lives, from technology to really natural things like a natural product, like a cotton t-shirt that's been produced with some technology and, you know, Everything is STEM. STEM is everywhere.
It is, yeah. And which is why I've long advocated for geography to be recognised as a STEM subject. But I don't know where G would fit into the acronym. But maybe I don't know, if the A is branching over everything, maybe the G is the thing that's propping everything up. I don't know.
Oh, yes. Yes, I like that. That's good.
That was amazing little feature, folks. Well done. There's two little things to do. I'm not going to let you get away without spilling the beans, you two. And I'm going to ask you each about the other ones again this time, right? So, Sam, I'm going to start with you about Simon, right? Now, apparently Simon is currently learning to play the piano, and I want to know if that's driving you nuts or not.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I can answer that.
Well, can I be honest? Yeah. No, I think it's a wonderful, wonderful thing to learn an instrument, particularly when you're an adult.
Yeah, yeah.
But can I just say that I have encouraged Simon to use some headphones at times, but he's getting so good now. He's getting much better. Like, it's one of those things, you know, like when someone's learning something, it's usually a child, isn't it? And you're thinking, oh, that's so lovely. And then you're thinking, why have I encouraged them to do this?
Oh, but, God, yes.
No, he's doing really, really well and he's getting better. I think what are you about a year in now, Simon? You're just teaching yourself as well. I think it's fantastic. You haven't had a formal lesson.
Wow.
So, and now you...
No. Well, yeah. No, so I mean, I could already read music, so that, you know, that bit,
helps.
One of the hard bits I had, but Sam has been very patient.
You're doing really well. You're doing really well, but yeah, at times, I'm just like, oh no, not again, because it's the same tune over and over. And I'm like,
that's
just play
it, isn't it?
Else.
Yeah, yeah. In one of the offices they've given me, at one of the schools I'm assigned to, I'm right by the music room and the music practice rooms. Oh my goodness, if I have to hear another soft piano rendition of Gangster's Paradise one more time.
Well, that's it. It's the repetition, isn't it? Can't get around that.
Oh,
really,
I
though,
can't believe a song that I absolutely adore and love, I'm being turned off,
I've,
you know, like
it for you.
30 years killed after it was released. Oh. I don't know. Anyway, so Simon, you can get your own back now. So apparently Sam thinks that if she ever was to go on Mastermind, her specialist subject would be food and drink. So tell us about
it
her
would.
Cooking.
It would.
No.
I don't think it's really about the cooking so much as the eating. I think that's where her real passion lies. She is a very good cook, but it's definitely that exploration of food from around the world and just, yeah, that love of eating and drinking and being with friends and family and kind of the joy that brings and just kind of the exploration side of it as well. We've been, you know, really lucky, and we've been to some fantastic places around the world and had some amazing food and drink both in the UK and abroad. And she definitely is a foodophile. If we've got like a quiz at Christmas or something like that, food drink round.
Oh, nice.
Yep. It's funny because everyone thinks, oh, you'll do science and nature. And I'm thinking,
no,
I'll probably get it wrong.
People say that with me in geography. Yeah. They're like, you're going to ace all the geography questions. I'm like, trouble is that you need to know too much, folks. It could be about anything.
It's so big. Exactly. You They'll know. Probably ask some physics question and I just won't know the answer. Yeah. But, you know, if it's a food and drink type question, I'm your gal. And the thing is, this does link to science again, because as a scientist, I was thought, you know, you have to go to conferences and travel a bit.
Yes.
And I've been lucky to go I worked for a few weeks in a lab in India, for example. So got to try out lots of lovely Indian food in the Indian Institute of Sciences in Bangalore, which was wonderful. So, yeah,
wow.
It's a great extra thing to being a scientist that you don't really know when you're thinking of going into that field. I mean, I never expected to be able to do that. So, but because science is a global thing and you collaborate with scientists all around the world. So I have friends from all different places and, you know, and they'd come to John and Iss and we'd cook together and, you know, learn all different things. So there you go.
Yeah. It does. Yeah. Science does make you a bit of a connoisseur, doesn't it? Really? Yeah. Because when you think about that.
I don't know about that.
I wouldn't call her a connoisseur.
I still like a baked potato and baked beans.
Oh, good old baked. That's one of the best things about Ziggy's on campus is their £1.50 baked potatoes. Jacket potatoes.
Can't go wrong.
Can't go wrong with that. Right. Last thing then, folks, is I'm going to link you back to my previous guest. So I had the wonderful Dr. Catherine Walker, a colleague of mine who's at the University of Manchester. Good discussion, that one. Listen back to that one, folks. And so she was given a word by the previous guest to link to geography, or in this case, it could be to use STEM at all, because this feature is called We're All Geographers, where we chain everybody together using words or phrases. So when I asked Catherine what word or phrase she wanted to give to you folks, she came up with the word illustration. So illustration is a word that you... between you have got 30 seconds to talk about, and I do have a timer and I'm going to be strict on this, so have a little think while I find my little timer button.
Sam briefly now, I mean 30 seconds, that's pretty small change for her, so
you gotta have, I want you to try your best to have equal say in this, folks. Right, I have my timer, so when you're ready you can start and give me a nod and I will play this timer. So 30 seconds on illustration between the both of you.
I'll go first. So illustrations, maps. I'm thinking maps for geography. So, and I'm thinking mapping. So, you know, you can look at some really beautiful maps from like Middle Ages. There's kind of like maps between Colchester and London. And then you could look at AI mapping and future mapping. Sam, go.
Well, I just think of botanical illustrations and the old plant hunters that would travel around the world. Like, I'm thinking of Victorians, and they make these beautiful plates in these wonderful books of botanical illustrations, and that inspires me very much.
Oh, there you go. Perfect. Look at that. Spot on.
Oh,
yeah. You two like really just... are in tune with each other, aren't you?
More
bless,
than 30 seconds, but I'll be kind.
Although, is it telling that Simon went, oh, I went first?
Yeah.
I was the only way I was going to get a word in.
Oh gosh, I don't know it. If my plant hunters, does that link to geography? I think it does.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because, you know, they grow in certain conditions and certain biomes and climates.
Yes.
You know, so therefore the illustrations.
Yes.
Right,
it's all about
you two.
Different habitats.
So, and the next thing you've got to collaborate on is what word you want to give to the next guest.
Oh my goodness.
I mean, I'm just looking behind you, Sam. I'm thinking mirror.
I've got a word in mind.
Oh, okay.
You could do mirror.
We could do mirror. Right there. We could do mirror, Simon.
No, mirror's good.
Which is basically, that's a rubbish idea. Let's hear mine.
No. Oh, I should have done this a long time ago.
Well, mirror's fine. I don't know why, but in my mind, I had the word bubble, but I don't know.
That's a wonderful idea.
But I don't know how that connects to geography. Really.
It's such bubble a perceptive and intelligent idea. I think bubble is the one we'll go with.
Bubble? Do you think?
Yeah.
Okay,
well, I don't
folks.
Know.
So, I'm only receiving what I'm being given here. So we're going for bubble because that was the last word that was said. So you two can duke it out
bubble.
Over dinner tonight, right?
Okay.
So, folks, have you got any shout-outs you'd like to give? I mean, I know, obviously, we've shouted out folks who contribute to the New STEM Awards. Sam, you've mentioned your colleagues at the John Innes Centre. But anyone in particular you'd like to say hi to?
I mean, just hello to all the team at East Norfolk as well, the geography team, Earth Sciences, Environmental Science, Geology, one of the few places still doing Geology A-level, which is a big specialism that we're very proud of. And everyone, I mean, Sam might have mentioned them, but everyone who's supported us with the YSA over the years, I mean, our partners, our patrons, you know, there's too many to mention, but it works because of them. Young people get to do it because of them as well. And the teachers that drive it, you know, you need teachers who are passionate in those schools. Yeah. And if we didn't have those, then young people wouldn't get the opportunities, and they are making a difference every single day.
Yeah, well said, Simon. I think that's perfect.
Yeah, and I want to give a shout out to another podcast guest that I had, and that's who you know, and that's Ro Proctor. So hello to them.
Ro.
So they're
part of the YSA story.
Absolutely, yes, they are. They're a lovely human being, and I had the privilege of doing a little bit of stuff with them before for an LGBTQ project that I did for work. So wonderful human being. So folks, that's the first ever Coffee and Geography couples, hopefully not the last. I hope that I found that very entertaining. I'm sure you did too. And to what I'll do, I'll put all the links in the description. So for the Youth STEM Award in particular, Simon, I know you're on, and I don't call it X, I call it Twitter. So your handle on that is, you got Youth STEM Award one. So what's the Youth STEM Award one, and what's your one, your handle on Twitter?
I'm not on Twitter.
Oh.
I'm on Twitter.
Oh, it's Sam's the other way around. Sam's on Twitter.
Yeah. Other way around.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's at Youth STEM with a capital YOUTHSTEMM, all capitals. And I'm at Sam Brown Fox. Sam Brown Fox, all little letters, on Twitter.
Yeah. So there you go, folks. And that's how you can get in touch with them. And if you want to know anything more about the Youth STEM Award, please, please do check it out. It is such an amazing initiative. Oh, well, I'm breathless now because having the force of both of you was just absolutely incredible. So thank you so much for giving up your time. And I know how much your time is precious because you do so much for yourselves, for the community, for everything. And I know, Simon, you know, from an ex-teacher to a teacher, how much work you put in as well. So thank you so much for giving up your afternoon. It's been absolutely delightful.
Thank you, Kit.
Thank you for having
great
us.
Fun. Thank
it
you.
Has indeed.
Thank you so much for listening. We hope you had fun. If you haven't already done so, please subscribe to the podcast and give us a rave review. Make sure you share and rate each episode, as every time you do this, it helps more people find us and continues the conversation. If you fancy being a guest or have any feedback, follow us on Twitter at @coffeegeogpod and send us a DM. Or you can email us at coffeegeogpod@geogramlings.com. Until next time, keep jogging.